This is the audio version of the book Jailer by Acharya Vijay Abhishekar Suriji Maharaj in the voice of Rahul Kapoor Jain. Chapter 6. At the time of British rule, Vadalagam, as we know it today, used to be called Dungari. Post-independence, the ruler of the village lost his power to govern. Two brothers of the royal Rajput family, who were the landholders of the village, gauged the situation and decided to separate. The village of Vadala, which they had inherited, was divided between both of them, with their mutual consent and to their satisfaction. All the wealth, land, animals, precious metals were appropriately apportioned to both of them, except for an estate at measuring 100 vigas, which was located on the outskirts of the village. This piece of land went to the elder brother Veera Bhai, as he had won it as a prize from the state in a shooting contest. The younger brother Ram Bhai did not ask for the share in it, wisely, as he knew that the estate was not a part of the inheritance but was won by elder brother because of his skills. 20 years went by, Veera Bhai passed away. The sons of both brothers had grown up to be young men. They took charge of administrating their own pieces of land. One day, Ram Bhai's heirs asked for a share in the estate. Veera Bhai's son tried to explain to them, "This piece of land was won by our father as a prize. Even our uncle, your father, did not ask for a share in it. We are now demanding it." A case was filed in the court. The case kept getting adjourned and the fees of the lawyers kept mounting. The sons of the elder brother were wise. They told their cousins, "The case will never end, but in the process, both our families will be wiped out financially. Then give us our share of the estate. If uncle says that a part of the estate belongs to him, then we will readily part with half of it. He has confirmed the fact." "No, uncle has to say to us in court." "You will not go back on your words?" "We swear by God, we will not fail to honor the promise." Ram Bhai's sons were ecstatic. "God has been kind to us. Uncle's sons have lost their mind. Their ability to think has become dull. We are sure to get our half of the share. And value of the land would definitely have gone up in the last 35 years. Ram Bhai's sons came back to the village with joy in their hearts and told everyone in the village what had transpired. Everyone was stunned. "Veera Bhai's sons have made a mistake. In this Kaliyug, should one be trusting someone so much?" People even asked Veera Bhai's son, "Will you part with your share if your uncle says so?" "Yes, he's our uncle and we trust him." Ram Bhai's sons went to the mother. "Ma, we have got our half a share." "How come? We have won the case." "No, we will win the case." They kept her abreast of the latest development and pleaded with her, "Ma, you must ask father to demand his share." "No, I cannot ask for such a thing because I have not done so my entire life." "All right, then we will ask him." The sons went back to the father and told him everything. Ram Bhai smiled at the thought of his nephews making him a witness. "Father, you have to come to the court. Neither of us brothers have ever been to a court. Now it's time for you to come. I have no choice but to come since you are so insistent and they have made me a witness." The sons were happy. They were prompting the father from time to time, preparing him to testify in their favor, and were very confident of winning the case. The date arrived. Everyone reached the court. The defense lawyer introduced Ram Bhai as a witness and called him to the witness box. He was made to swear by placing his hand on the religious book. The sons were happy and looked at the cousins, thinking, "He is your uncle, but he is our father. Now the money is almost within our reach." The nephews were worried that the uncle's attachment for his sons might win over his duties eventually. The defense lawyer asked Ram Bhai, "At the time of separation, was this part of the estate not divided?" "No, it wasn't divided." "Is it true that you too have a share in it?" Ram Bhai started thinking. The lawyer asked him, "Why aren't you answering?" "Shouldn't I think before I answer? This is no small matter. It is a blood fighting against our own blood. Once you come out with the truth, the fight will end, as what you say is agreeable to both the parties. We do not have a share in the estate, and we also do not have a right to demand the share." Both the sons were shell-shocked. With anger in their eyes, they told their father, "You sunk our ship, which was almost ready to dock. You are the ones who were going to sink the ship. Sons, you were prepared to sell the self-respect and honor of our family for a mere sum of money. Our virtues are not for sale. All the nearby villages trust our family, and that trust and faith will always remain intact." This really is life led at an elevated plane. No bungalow or beautiful piece of furniture can produce this kind of hi-fi life. It is only the soul that can bring one that pleasure. This is the grandeur of the soul. This is good moral behavior, and it is millions of times more priceless than wealth. In this world, nothing is more significant than morally sound conduct or virtues, not even one's life. This is why Mahasatis do not hesitate to give up their life in order to shield their chastity. The soul which gives up its life for safeguarding its chastity does not suffer any loss. In fact, it only attains limitless gain. This is because nature highly values the safeguarding of chastity, especially at the cost of one's own life. Nature endows millions of times more prosperity and a better quality of life to the person who has given up one's life in this way. It is never a bad bargain for the soul to forsake one's wealth, time, a dear one, or one's body for the sake of moral conduct, good behavior, or virtues. In reality, the soul only reaps greater and grander benefit. All of the above facts determine the fact that health is more important than wealth, and good behavior is of much more importance than health. Monetary loss may be to any extent, but is no worse than a bug bite. Surrendering oneself to anger is like a mouse seeking shelter from a cat. Query: this means that one must not do anything if there is a likelihood of incurring a large financial loss and helplessly watch the loss being incurred? Answer: knowledgeable men never prohibit appropriate wise business dealings. They never preach that if the debtors are not paying up, do not collect what is due to you. Query: however, one has to be stern while collecting the dues, and sometimes one tends to get angry in the process. Answer: if you have substance, you should give up collecting. If the debtor wants to pay, so be it. Otherwise, let there be a loss. One cannot afford to get angry. Guard forgiveness either at the cost of wealth. Nature will appreciate that effort. Question: what if we lack substance? We in turn may have borrowed money from someone, and that person may be after us to repay the money back. What if that person is harassing not just me, but the whole family? Answer: that is why the learned have forbidden such financial dealings. To set out to acquire wealth, being dependent on somebody else's money, and then to declare oneself as bankrupt if that money is lost due to either some error or carelessness is a Western perversity. It is not our culture. Yet, experiencing anger while collecting dues cannot be considered as one's duty when put in such a situation. One should then regret it. While contemplating, one should think, "I am burning sandalwood to generate burning pieces of coal," or "I am demolishing an entire palace to obtain one nail." O soul, you are not going to recover your amount till your obstacles are removed. Then why are you destroying your virtues of forgiveness by letting your anger overcome you? O soul, be cautious and careful so that anger does not transform into enmity. Do not feel elated at seeing your debtors in trouble. Do not even by mistake seek the help of such people who will threaten your debtors with death. Pray to the God for His welfare. One should contemplate each thought, each action. Despite trying to collect your money, you may not succeed in getting it back. You get angry once, then twice, then over and over again. Anger is a feeling which escalates over time as one's work is not achieved. Soon, the intensity of anger becomes so excessive that poor Kshama is stunned and scared beyond words. As a result, she is unable to gather enough courage to show her face again. After days, months, years, or even after lifetimes. In that much time, wealth may come and go several times. The most surprising thing is that by resorting to whatever means available, you have freed the money that was deposited with someone. And now that you can have cash in hand, you are faced with the dilemmas of where to invest it. If your desire was to invest, then wasn't it already employed somewhere? Why do you bother to free it? So kshama is more important than wealth. Even if you're likely to incur heavy losses, it cannot become the cause of either anger or enmity. An important fact which has to be borne in mind is that there are no separate markets for incurring a profit or a loss. There is no concept like profit is incurred in the office or the shop and a loss is incurred at home. Where it is possible to incur a profit, it is equally possible to incur a loss. In the same manner, there are no different markets for forgiveness or anger. The occasion where one can get angry can also be a one where one can be forgiving. The same behavior in others which infuriates us has brought forth forgiveness in the minds of the great souls of yore. When someone abused us, insulted us, blamed us wrongly, spoke bitter words to us, censured us, broke a valuable thing, slapped us, caused us to incur a loss, we termed them as actions that caused us anger. However, nature is not prepared to consider even one of them as a cause of anger. It considers each of them as the motive for forgiveness. A single person may be harassing us time and again, because of whom we have to bear terrible afflictions and pain. By describing to the world what we are undergoing, we may be able to convince everyone about our plight. The whole world may be on our side and opine. When someone causes so much annoyance, it is but natural for a person to get angry. However, karma satta refuses to grant us the right to be annoyed. It tells us whatever suffering comes your way becomes the cause of forgiveness. You have to be forgiving. You have no right to be angry. How much had Agni Sharma suffered? At first, he was the subject of everyone's jest. Then he was the butt of everyone's harsh jokes and cruelty. And to top it all, he had to miss out on breaking his masak shaman with a parna on 3 different occasions. Putting ourselves in Agni Sharma's shoes, we must contemplate. If an individual exercises extreme caution and solemnly confesses not to allow an error under any circumstances regarding a certain important matter, and in that same matter, that individual who earlier was responsible for causing you mental agony by cruelly making you an object of amusement and laughter, fails to meet his commitment by giving you the excuse of a headache, and then the second time round gives the excuse of a war, and yet again passes on his obligation, what would one think of this person? Not one day ahead, not one day later, but he gets a sudden headache that very day. Again, a month later, on that very day of breaking of the fast, a war suddenly breaks out. These in your mind would all be excuses. Even the headache was a pretense. The talk of a war was a made-up story. First, the request to be allowed, the chance to perform the parna, then an extreme persistence about it, then feeling of anguish at having missed the parna. It was a ploy to make you accept the doing of parna at his hands and then to cause you harassment by making you miss it. Wouldn't one have these thoughts? While thinking like this, isn't one likely to be irate? Would it affect only us or in general any person? Agni Sharma had to bear the brunt of Gunasen's errors by missing out on parna twice and had to continue his austerity for the 3rd month. By then, his equanimity had reached new heights. But when the same mistake was repeated the 3rd time, he lost his temper. This show of anger was not acceptable to Karmasatta, who considered his anger to be a crime and gave him a harsh punishment. The minister, who had a score to settle with Khandaksuri, had caused the king to wrongly believe something that gained him the right to punish Khandaksuri and his disciples. He constructed a mechanical oil mill to crush Khandaksuri and his 500 disciples alive. Khandaksuri's 499 beloved disciples were crushed first for no fault of theirs. The last disciple was a child monk who was very young, tender and delicate. Kandaksuri requested the minister, "Brother, I won't be able to see him being crushed. Please crush me first." This small request was also declined. He crushed the Balmuni first and then Kandaksuri. The anger displayed by Kandaksuri for this unfairness and terrible cruelty was not forgiven by Karmasatta. Even he was given a cruel punishment. Kurut and Utkurut were brothers who were both monks. On account of performing extreme austerities and leading a pure, restrained life while working towards the goal of attainment of moksha, they achieved many labdhis. They did the Chaturmasa in a place called Kunala. The rain god, for some reason, had been offended at that time. Not only was there not a single drop of rain, but there was no sign of any rain clouds in the sky. The ignorant people, desperate for rain, began imagining all sorts of things like the monks must have control over the rain. They began harassing the Mahatmas. Someone slandered them, while someone else abused them or pushed them. The two great souls were absolutely engrossed in their silent pursuit. Not only did they not hit the people back, they neither retaliated nor complained. They bore all their afflictions with equanimity. Days went by. The harassment from the people only increased to spitting and slapping them. This went on for days. Then the people became uncontrollable, mistaking the great soul's calm and composure as their cowardice and helplessness. They started beating them with rods. The monks started bleeding heavily. Suddenly, the monks' even-temperedness gave way. They summoned the king of rain and ordered him to pour down for 15 days and nights incessantly. They were the holders of many powers and the word was bound to bear fruit. The whole country was inundated and carried away in the waters. Even the highly accomplished Mahatmas were not spared and were carried away to the seventh hell. Karmasatta did not forgive them for their display of anger. Karmasatta is very clear that justice has to be carried out. The whole world may consider anger worth forgiving, but in my law, it is not so. Under my law, anger is unpardonable. Question: what if it is the other person who is instigating us? Answer: it is not for us to see or think what the other person is doing. We were going to spend a Chaturmasa in Palanpur in Vikram Samvat 2038. Pujya Gurudev, Sri Vijay Bhuvan Bhanu Surishwarji Maharaj Sahib was traveling to Palanpur along with his disciples. On the way, they came to a mid-sized town. There, a very aged Acharya was already stationed with his big family of disciples. His health was quite critical due to his old age and physical condition. Swargastha Pujya Gurudev Sri was proficient and enthusiastic about Niryamana. He decided to stay there for 10 days for the samadhi of the aged Mahatma who was critically ill and dying. There were some ascetics in their 20s who were also staying there. Gurudev was married to the Jain faith and was above seeing who belonged to his assembly of monks and who belonged to another assembly. These may not be my disciples, but they belong to my faith. If they study, they will bring fame to the order established by my faith. He decided to impart knowledge to these young disciples with these noble sentiments. To know the hidden meanings of the scriptures, one needs logic. In order to cultivate the power of reasoning, one normally studies scriptures of logic. However, learning the preliminary technical terms used in the logic itself is so difficult and daunting that the students were likely to get nervous and give up. Even if they did not give up further studies of advanced scriptures, it would prove to be more profound to grasp. Pujya Gurudev Sri was very competent at logic. He composed a volume named Nyaya Bhumika after a deep and repeated study of all the scriptures of logic. Even the most erudite pundits of Banaras were astounded on seeing the great volume and told Gurudev Sri simplicity that the other pundits have not been able to bring forth in their books in numerous years has been brought by you. Gurudev approached the young ascetics and told them, "In my few days of staying here, I can teach you the volume of Nyaya Bhumika so that other advanced volumes become easier for you to grasp." The young ascetics could not refuse the offer of such a great soul who was extremely reputed in Sri Sangha. The lessons began, but these young ascetics, instead of showing the faith and respect, behaved in an intensely malicious, hostile, and disrespectful manner, as if they were his sworn enemies. This behavior troubled Gurudev Sri's disciples. One day, they complained to Gurudev Sri, "You are such a vigilant, restrained achiever. You believe in working 24 hours of the day so that not a minute is wasted. You have allotted your precious time from your tight schedule to teach these young monks, but they do not seem to care. Over and above, their behavior towards you is disrespectful and insulting. Kindly stop teaching them. What is the need for it?" The words that were then spoken by Gurudev to enlighten his disciples are worth noting down in the diaries of our heart. He elucidated, when Karmasatta accounts for everyone's deed, it does not see who behaved in which way. It only sees what we have done. This is worth understanding. When Karmasatta opens our file, it does not open anyone else's file. It is as if Karmasatta is telling us, "I will see what someone else has done when I open that person's file. Just now, I have opened only your file. If I can read anger in it, I will punish you severely for it. If I read forgiveness in it, I will reward you grandly." Gunasen had ridiculed Agni Sharma over and over again. He had missed out on performing his parna thrice. However, Karmasatta was telling Agni Sharma, "Gunasen's file should be buried in some drawer of some cupboard for the time being. Just now, I have only your file in my hand, and it is filled with terrible rage, a knot of violent enmity, a niyanu to kill Gunasen life after life. I can read only such things which are grave crimes. You will have to bear frightful afflictions for infinite times in hell as a punishment for your grievous crimes. I will read and think about what Gunasen has done when I take up his file." When a businessman has to draw up his profit and loss accounts, he checks only his own books. Does he see the profit or loss his neighbor has incurred? Or does he see what a certain businessman's book reveal? What would a patient who has been hospitalized be interested in? Would he be interested in the files of the patients lying to his right or to his left? Or would he be interested in his own file? He would get irritated if an expert doctor discussed his neighbor's health instead of discussing his own case. On our day of judgment, Karmasatta takes up our file for inspection. Karmasatta turns to the golden page on which there is a note of all our good deeds. However, if at that time it overlooks the same and starts taking even the slightest interest in someone else's file, would we like that? This is the reason why Karmasatta believes in looking at only that file which it has opened and not any other. To get defensive and say, "He had abused me, had uttered daunting, hurtful words which were heart-piercing and had harassed me no end," has no meaning. Karmasatta tells us not to open others' files. It tells you to talk only about what you have done, the account of which appears in your file. With reference to the prisoner's example, if we ponder deeply, then it'll become quite apparent that the abuser, the beater, the harasser are none other than the official jailers of the court of Karmasatta. The jailer punishes the prisoner according to the punishment ordered by the court. He can even hang the prisoner if so ordered. However, does the prisoner have a right to get angry at all? He has to undergo the punishment quietly. Even if he is given the capital punishment, the court does not give the prisoner the license to get angry. This is the unwritten law of the court of Karmasatta. A punishment may be mild or severe, but at the end, it is a punishment. It is a punishment for your crime, so it is your duty to bear it with calm composure. Whatever the loss you might incur, you do not acquire a right to show your annoyance. You may have to tolerate a slap, your limbs may be broken, or your life may be lost, but under no circumstance will Karmasatta accept your anger. One must decide to be cool, collected, and forgiving when painful occasions arise, if one does not wish to be punished and instead wishes to be rewarded grandly by Karmasatta. In short, all the occasions when one has to suffer become opportunities for one to display forgiveness and not outrage. If you have 10 reasons to be annoyed in a day, it is only resentment that is sent forth all 10 times. Music of forgiveness is not played even once in your heart. Indignation comes very naturally to one, whereas it is a struggle to be forgiving. One may have resolved never to be provoked, and yet when such an occasion arises, resentment pours out. One's determination at that point becomes fruitless. One has experienced harm caused by anger many times. One has also been explained in sermons over and over again how damaging and despicable anger is. Yet the heart cannot but lean towards anger. It is believed no work can be achieved without anger. If we do not show indignation, we may be taken as cowards. If we are not angry, people may disregard us. In the infinite time gone by, there have been infinite occasions when the soul has been wrathful willfully and has never exercised forgiveness, due to which its existence itself has become vindictive in nature. This is precisely the reason that even now the soul is more inclined to feel anger and not forgiveness, even after understanding the terrible aftermath the anger can bring. If one desires one's existence to be abound in forgiveness, then one needs to be repeatedly counseled about the damage caused by anger and the benefits reaped by pardoning. It is equally important for one to experience incidents in life where one's forgiveness would be put to a test. An ascetic had an acrimonious disposition like that of sage Durvasa. It was as if he was reincarnation of the sage himself. He needed only the slightest excuse for his fury to be unleashed. He became disgruntled by his nature and decided it was time to change. He decided to go live in an uninhabited region in the Himalayas. He stayed there for 30 years. In this longer period, he did not show anger even once. He thought that he had conquered his wild nature and was ready to go live amongst people. This was around the time the fair of Kumbh was being held. The place was brimming with people. Someone in the crowd stepped on his toe by mistake, and the ascetic's violent anger erupted like a volcano. "Are you blind? Couldn't you have been more careful?" Why was it that despite not showing his anger for 30 years, he had not imbibed forgiveness? If we think about it, it becomes quite evident that it was because no opportunity had arisen in the seclusion of the mountains, where forbearance could be cultivated. Children who are not used to walking without their footwear right from the very young age develop tender feet. Walking barefoot on rough, hard surfaces make a child's legs strong. Today, a child is introduced to a calculator right from the very young age. Therefore, his mind is attuned to it in a certain way. He may be perplexed even at solving simple problems like 12 into 17 mentally. Whereas a child who was taught to solve math sums mentally will have its answer in a blink of an eye. It is clear then that more complex problems cultivate the mind and make it more agile. Nature is applying the same rule which is applicable to the body and the mind to the soul. It is as if it is conveying to the soul, you have been abused, insulted, or slapped by someone so that you can nurture the quality of forgiveness in you. Why don't you think that without the abuser, it is difficult to foster forgiveness? Therefore, please understand that the abuse, the slap are means to achieve and strengthen forgiveness and not to display anger. To train or initiate one in math, an easy sum like 2 plus 2 equals 4 is taught, followed by tougher ones gradually. Over time, one is given more and more complex, mind-wrecking ones which are almost impossible to solve. Similarly, a soul which has learned to react with forgiveness on being slapped is given further advanced lessons by presenting him with situations where his limbs are likely to be broken. For a soul which has not forsaken kshama even on such dire occasion, to progress to greater heights, an additional life-taking situation is created. One should also think in a similar fashion about an incurred loss which may increase sequentially. Therefore, nature declares that be it a loss of crores of rupees or a fatal blow, these are all a cause for pardon and not rage. For this reason, nature does not spare a soul which gets enraged in such situations from getting punished. We have to decide what we desire from nature, a punishment or a felicitation. Another way of thinking so as to cultivate kshama is that abuses, insults or financial losses do not affect our blood pressure or sugar levels. But anger, which is vented on such occasion, is surely an invitation to hypertension. Correspondingly, the harassment caused by others has no power to send us to a hellish existence. Whereas, anger shown by us at that time can make us a candidate for hell. The minister crushed the 500 disciples in a mechanical oil mill, but he could not cause spiritual degeneration in even one of them because none of them reacted angrily. They showed unprecedented equanimity. Kandhaksuri, who was also crushed, showed intense displeasure, due to which he got a catastrophic existence. When questioned by Shrenik Maharaja about Prasannachandra Rajarshi's next existence, the omniscient Lord Mahavir replies he will go to the seventh hell. Who is responsible for sending Rajarshi to the seventh hell? Is it the betrayal by the ministers? Or is it the mental fierce battle waged by Rajarshi due to his anger to believe the ministers to be evil? On being questioned a second time, the Lord answers, Sarvata Siddha Viman Vagi Devani Dundabitya Rishipamya Keval Gyan. In a fraction of a moment after the Lord replied, Dev Dundabhi started playing, heralding manifestation of omniscience in Rajarshi. What was the reason behind the change in his status, where Sarvata Siddha Viman and Keval Gyan were attained? Was it because the minister's behaviors improved, or was it because he ceased to think the ministers to be evil and his equanimity reached the pinnacle of mind's purest mode? All this makes it very evident that it is not so much the discordant behavior displayed by others as our own anger which causes the damage. It is quite straightforward. Is being abused a bigger loss or being consigned to a hellish existence? In the same way, is being slapped, having your limbs broken, losing money, being deprived of food a bigger loss or getting an existence in hell? A hellish existence is even worse than a loss of life. If at the time of death one has maintained equanimity, one is definitely going to achieve a more glorious, prosperous next birth. But if one loses equanimity and attains hell, then one experiences the most terrible pain at death. Consequently, one undergoes the affliction of death infinite number of times. One fact is affirmed that any type of unfavorable behavior by others is akin to only a bite of a bed bug. And to react angrily at that time is like a mouse seeking the support of a cat. Let us reflect on another important matter. To say that I got angry because someone abused me does not befit a person desirous of peace in the present and happiness in the future.